You are listening to Offensive Lines with Marlon and Boyd. Small stakes NFL gambling for the average fan.
Welcome to Offensive Lines. I'm Marlon.
I'm Boyd.
And we're taking on a little more serious subject than usual tonight. As advertised, we both have read League of Denial, the book which you've probably heard of, but if you haven't, it was a very influential book about a previously unknown brain disorder. Boyd, you going to help me out with that name?
Chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
We're just going to call it CTE from here on. Or at least I am.
Well, okay, I practiced that pronouncing that for a week. So. Looked up the Webster Dictionary pronunciation of it. Yeah. I didn't want to look like the sportscasters you see on TV that haven't read their copy for the night and then can't pronounce a name.
Yeah, but, well, in any case, this book and the companion Frontline documentary, also called League of Denial, is probably the single biggest factor influencing the NFL right now. From the lawsuit, the class action lawsuit, which was tentatively settled for $765 million, to many of the current rules about violence on the field, particularly the helmet-to-helmet hits, and many of the rules that people say are sissifying football. Now, I think we're going to break our discussion into sort of two frameworks. One, we're going to talk a bit about the disease itself and the studies that have created such scrutiny about this. Remember, we are not medical doctors, not even close, but still, as presented in the book, I think we have some valid points to bring. I also want to say I'm going to be critical of some parts of this. I am not in any way a denier of this disease, CTE, and I am not saying that everyone who treats this so seriously is wrong. They could easily turn out to be right. I just want that out there. I'm not being a stooge trying to protect my game, though some sort of bias for there is.
Well, that's not what you told me last night. That's not what you were saying last night.
That's right. I cashed my Goodell check.
You were a denier all last night. Now you change your tune? What's with that? I'm just pissing
He's
with you.
He's a lion dick. So I'll just do a quick summary here. Webster, who's suddenly his first name.
Mike Webster. Not the dictionary.
Hall of Fame player for the Pittsburgh Steelers dynasty years. Ended up on the autopsy table of Bennett Umalu, and he did a section of the brain and discovered a massive amount of tau protein that, you know, really unprecedented amounts. It is this syndrome that they believe led to many, many symptoms in Mike Webster. They have since examined the brains of, I believe, 35 former football players. CTE has been discovered in 34 of them. Now, through this period, they've performed several studies on this, one of which was a phone-in poll. They also, you know, have aggressively sought to have the brains of former football players for examination. And then this has fractured into a multitude of competing groups that either wish to disprove or prove the prevalence and the effects of this disease. Is that sort of fair, Boyd?
Yes. And the only thing I wanted to add was that they'd seen brain damage similar to this in boxers, but never to the degree or the depth in the brain that they're seeing in the football players.
Yeah, and the depth is kind of a crucial factor in there, which leads to one of my biggest issues with this. There is no control. There is no notion of normal, because this was something that was never looked for in the past. You know, I find that worrisome.
Yeah, but any discovery of a new disease or anything like that, like, they had no control group for AIDS.
No.
But it's there.
Oh, absolutely. And
so
it,
I don't.
It is definitely there. I mean, I think I would be.
Oh, no, but
it's absurd for me to try to deny the existence of this.
No, but when you don't know what you're looking, when it's something brand new, you can't have a control. There's no possible way to have a control.
Well,
when you find it by mistake, or not mistake, but by accident, it's very hard to have a control. And when they found it the first time, and the stories started to come out about Webster and the condition in which he lived his life prior to the end of his career and how he lived it after, there's many things similar in the cases that they've studied so far in behavior patterns, relationships with friends, family, how those splinter and they become withdrawn, personality disorders, everything is very similar in these cases that they've studied. Now, I don't know how you create a control group now without everyone in the NFL, when they sign their contract, sign a organ donor card saying you can study my brain when I'm gone. And even that, how do you get a control? Because these guys are all roughly the same age, 40s and 50s, when they're committing suicide or passing away. So how do you get a control? Like you were saying, how do you know if a football player dies when he's 75 and he has tau protein present in his brain, or a football player? That's the question we're at, is how do you know?
Well, yeah, what are the next steps? What is the prevalence of this? Now, I do know that, you know, there are 6,000 preserved brains at Harvard, which presumably span a huge cross-section of both time and individuals.
Okay, but the problem with that is the brain has to be preserved almost right as the autopsy's performed.
But they were preserved for medical reasons. You know, for the study of the human brain. So, I mean, I could easily be wrong here, but...
Well, no, I'm just throwing that out there so people understand. And it may, and we don't know if it may not be preserved the way you need to study this particular disease. I just want people to know that the reason Webster's brain was able to be studied was the Bennett Omalu, just on a hunch, decided to preserve the brain so he could run tests on it. And this was a guy that didn't know NFL football. He was from Nigeria, came over, was wildly successful, very smart, multiple degrees, and
also
he just played
a
hunch.
A fame-hungry pathologist who, you know,
but that
just
doesn't...
before he, I know, but just before he did the brain thing, said to him, okay, make me famous.
No, but that's like saying, a woman who's promiscuous deserves to get raped.
Yeah, no, it's neither here nor there. It's, but that there part was, of it's irrelevant. But there was a desire to make.
But that desire goes through the whole book.
Yes.
Of everybody involved.
Well, and that brings me to a point I really want to make. In many ways, the book presents medical researchers versus the NFL, hence the title. And in many cases, they're right. But what it does a less of a job of explaining, I think, that everyone here has an agenda and motivation and a financial stake in this.
Well, every doctor that's working at a university in research needs money. And if you're not bringing in money, you won't be at the university very long.
Well, exactly. So, but I'm just saying that creates a bias, as maybe not as much as the NFL, but it does skew bias in studies. Everyone wants to be involved in something important. And that comes through all. I mean, at one point, one of the doctors involved releases a drink called Sports Brain Guard. You know, they are not quite as principled and neutral as sometimes the book makes them out to be.
No, but where they're neutral is in you can't fake the research.
No.
I know they seemed like scumbags trying to profit off of this, and a lot of them did. Riddell, the helmet company, is probably the sleaziest ones out of the book, in my opinion. Using flawed studies that the NFL commissioned to say that they designed a new helmet that would decrease concussions in high school age players and below by 31%.
Yeah, which was absolute crap.
And what happened to Riddell after that? Nothing.
No, they were forced to remove. They finally pulled that line about a decade later. They finally pulled that line from their advertising.
With retailers stating that people came in specifically asking for Riddell helmets because of it.
Well, wouldn't you? If this was supposedly the best helmet out there and your kid was playing football,
but it was,
they're going to do that.
Nobody was held culpable. The NFL wasn't held culpable.
Well, or Riddell. And here's the other thing. The study was known to be flawed at the point where it was published and at the point where they put it on the advertising.
They'd never studied.
They compared helmets. Like, there was no control, say.
They didn't even study high school kids.
Oh, no. But in the groups they did study, there was no consideration given to, was this helmet 15 years old, passed through, 15 years of teams. So, yeah, of course the Riddell helmet did a better job than a 15-year-old used helmet. It's not a surprise, but and that was known when they did that study and added it to their advertising. I kind of agree with you. I think Riddell comes off as the sleaziest entity in the book, and with the Riddell. NFL and brain Riddell. Vultures out Riddell, sorry, and with the NFL and brain vultures in the mix, that's a pretty impressive low light.
Yeah, now we should go back just a little bit, just because the study that was produced by the NFL for Riddell to be able to make this claim was done by a group that Paul Tagliabue started on his way out as commissioner of the NFL. It was called the Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee.
I love that name.
Mild. Just think about that for a second. Has any concussion you've seen in the NFL been mild? Anyway, it was headed by a rheumatologist, was the committee chair. They produced paper after paper to a neuroscience magazine that published them with prejudice. They were sent out for peer review, routinely cited as being flawed, and yet they still ran and became part of the public record. And it legitimizes the NFL's position on concussions. So when people think, oh, well, they're not going to lie to me, it's the NFL. They were influencing more than just the NFL with those studies.
Well, yes, and when you say peer-reviewed, usually if, you know, the peers reject it, the paper is rejected. I'm somewhat familiar with the process because my sister-in-law is a publishing researcher. So she's had things rejected or required for revision in the past, and I've heard about it. Now, usually they don't get published until the concerns are addressed or not published at all. This, the Neuroscience magazine would publish them and then put dissenting comments at the end, which really does no good because, as you said, they've entered into the syllabuses and the public record as definitive studies. No one's going to go back to the original publication and read dissenting comments.
And it's
it defeats peer review entirely.
And it was a private magazine. It's a privately owned magazine. It wasn't like the New England Journal of Medicine or anything like that. It was a privately run magazine. And the one part that I think I found most disturbing, and if you've ever wondered how famous people, athletes, actors, musicians get a hold of drugs or any other mood-altering substance, these doctors that work for NFL teams are fanboys. Is all they didn't want. They kept publishing these articles and towing the company line on concussions aren't bad in the game and don't cause brain injuries or long-term effects because they wanted to keep their association with the teams. And these guys were hand-picked because the NFL knew they would follow the company line. And it went on for the better part of a decade?
Well, the committee, the NFL Mild Traumatic Brain Injury Committee, I just had to say that at least once, was formed in 94. And it was at least a decade.
Well, it wasn't until... Sorry, Marla.
Oh, no. Before any significant dissent reached the public.
Well, the NFL didn't admit that there could be a link between concussions and adverse effects on the brain later in life until 2010. And their director of communications, Greg Aiello, said it to a reporter for the New York Times, and it was the only time the NFL has ever admitted to it. Once in 20 years. Only once. With all the studies that are out there, you can put a disclaimer in front of it if you want. We don't have a control group. We don't have enough studies done. But to never publicly state that there could be an issue is almost criminal.
Oh, no, I agree. And that's what I was trying to make in my point at the start. I believe absolutely that there is a connection. What I think has to be studied now is what is that connection? Why do some players get it and some players don't? Why are there other factors that can increase the risk? For example, many of this first wave of people were pretty much obviously steroid abusers. Now, there's one reference in the book that Dr. Bayless wrote a paper proving that steroids didn't cause it, which I've been unable to find. Now, that's an, you know, that could be true, but does steroids in combination with the concussion increase the risk? You know, there are so many questions out there that this problem has to be addressed and in a coherent way.
And other factors do. You made some valid points when we were talking leading up to this about our external factors involved that in conjunction with brain injuries will cause players to commit suicide, such as loss of a job, loss of a spouse. And then we're getting into gray areas. Is it the brain injury that's causing these things to happen? Loss of job, loss of spouse and family,
well,
as well as loss of income with bad investments, bad business decisions. It's almost like what comes first?
Well, exactly. I mean,
the chicken or the egg.
Old logical fallacy. Correlation does not necessarily mean causation. And a big goal of the research should be to determine, is the correlation causation, and what other factors?
But how do they?
One of the earlier things the concussions did was an anonymous survey of 575 players and their families, and they reported like these enormous instances of depression and moodiness and all of that. Now, that I really do have a problem with, because anyone who is generally forced to change their career in midstream from one of great financial compensation and adulation, the incidence of depression there happens literally to everyone. There are middle-aged people who are laid off who are killing themselves. I don't necessarily think that this is evidence that all these former players are suffering from CTE.
No, but we don't. Okay, in high profile cases, we don't see the same, or I can't recall as many in a short time frame from other professions where you would have fame, wealth, and adulation at this degree. So I'm talking actors that are popular for 5 to 10 years, musicians that have a couple of hits, and just you never hear from them again until they're 45, 50, and they do the oldies tour. You don't see that same kind of rate of suicide, or I'm sure there's depression, but we don't see the suicide from it. And the actual being able to clearly think to preserve your brain now, with Junior Seau and Dave Duerson when they shot themselves in the chest so that their brain could be studied. I know there's other people that have other circumstances that lead them to commit suicide, and it's horrible. But when the presence of this brain-altering chemical is in 34 out of 35 guys, I think we can assume, or close to assume, we can't say in all certainty, that this is a problem, and that it's not external factors that are leading to this. I think in most of the cases that they stated in the book, it was their change in their moods and behavior that led to the family falling apart or business relations falling apart.
Yes. Now, but you're saying which comes first, because in almost all those cases, there was drug abuse or alcohol abuse. There were business failures. Does the CTE cause the business failure? Or does the business failure and the general destruction of their lives lead to a cycle that is going to end that way with or without the CTE? Like, I think that we do have to determine. Because, you know,
but how would you ever
out of 35, Cantu himself, Robert Cantu from Emerson Hospital in Concord, states our sample is wildly skewed. Because it's like saying, you know, okay, this is a person who behaved this way in the past, then committed suicide, now we have his brain. But you are already looking at the symptoms before you get the brain.
No, but if the symptoms are similar and the brains are similar and the circumstances are very similar, like Webster and Duerson in particular had strong relationships with their family, wife, kids. And later in life, made horrendous financial decisions that left their families with nothing. And in Duerson's case, it's a little more gray because he was pretty. And that Duerson might even be different on a whole other level because he was well educated, very smart, ran a great business. And then it all just fell apart.
Yes.
Divorced from wife, who they were together for 20-odd years, very happy, at least according to her. Had everything you'd want, were buying vacation properties, had this great life, and then all of a sudden it veered 90 degrees, and he lost everything. And his is a case where I would be more apt to say that his financial failures led to his suicide as much as anything, but were his decisions that led him to financial ruin caused by his brain injuries? And that I don't know how they'll ever be able to determine that.
Well, no, you can't. And I think one part in the book was a little bit telling. Because Steve Young, who I saw take one of the worst concussive blows I've ever seen, called a friend after, I believe it might have been Duerson, he said.
No, it was Junior Seau.
Was it Junior Seau?
It was Gary Plummer. Okay. You phoned Gary Plummer because Plummer played with the Chargers and then the Niners.
Yeah.
Or the other way around, Chargers.
No, it was Chargers, then Niners. He actually left the Chargers the year before the Chargers got to the Super Bowl, and he was on the victorious team.
Smart man.
Yeah, slow white guy, but he played well. There are other stories about that, which are pretty amusing. But and he just said, no, I mean, look at yourself. You're not an alcoholic. You're not a drug abuser. You're not doing this. So
gambling addiction was another thing that came with this.
Well, a gambling addiction is pretty common with people who see their financial life slipping away, too. They figure if they can just get even, they come back. I mean, that linkage is not unusual.
But, okay, then let's use the Junior Seau case as an example. Was divorced from his wife. Everybody that they talked to in the book said he was the most charismatic, charming, help anybody that he ever could. Divorced his wife. Had little to no contact with his kids after the divorce.
The person he worked with the Seau Foundation said he lost interest in that.
He was engaged again, or engaged to another woman, basically admitted to assault threw her against a wall, was released from hospital. What was he in the hospital for? Or no, after he was arrested, he was released, driving home, and in hindsight, when his SUV went down that ravine, that was a suicide attempt to me.
I think so too.
He said he claimed he fell asleep. But not many people even at that time believed him. But then he kind of came back. I think he played football again after that. Did he not come back for the last half season after that with the Patriots when they had injuries at linebacker? I think he might have played another half season after that.
He might have gone to camp, but I don't know that he even made the roster. Like, or not camp. I think he might have been brought in.
Yeah, I don't think he
tried to do it, but I don't know that he got on the field.
But it's just when you see guys like that with the reputation he had and never had a misstep for 19 of his 20 years in the NFL, to have this amount of change and the sample size is always going to be small, I think, in these cases, because the average NFL career is only like 3.5 years. Do we know if when you look at an NFL player that's like Seau that played 20 years in the NFL, he's probably played 35 years or 30 years of football total. And this brings up another point I wanted to make. When is these lawsuits, a story comes out this week that the Alabama football program makes more money than all 30 NHL teams combined in a year? When do we start seeing players suing the college system? We're at the tip of the iceberg for litigation on this issue.
Yes.
You can go back to high school, how players were treated with concussions back in high school, how they're treated with them in college.
Yeah, but now, you know, like since 94.
But you could go back.
But in many ways previous to that, and in fact, for a few years after, I think you could make the defense that genuinely the knowledge wasn't there.
Agreed. But from the start of the MTBI by the NFL, that's like the line in the sand saying we're going to do something about concussions. Because the 94 was the year Steve Young got concussed and had to retire. They actually called it the year of the concussion in the book. Even Aikman, or Steve Young's agent, Lee Steinberg.
Steve Young played after 94.
No, I know, but that's
Super Bowl in 94, 95. And I was thinking more of the career-ending concussion where he called it quits, and that would be
that. But that was the year. The year they started it was 94, and in the book they called it the year of the concussion because there were some big hits, and it became part of the narrative because there were so many guys going down with concussions. I think Aikman might have been one of them, if I'm not mistaken. Well, he played the NFC Championship game with a concussion and didn't remember the game. So this is what the players used to deal with. If you could stand and you weren't throwing up, you basically got told you were going back in. And there's we can't get into detail with every case they discussed in the book.
No.
Because there's Bill Belichick's mentioned in it for basically overriding the medical staff and telling a guy to get out there.
And I've said this before. I mean, in the brief period where Joe Gibbs was in the booth, a special teamer was knocked cold in one game I was watching. And, like, this just reflects ignorance. I don't think there was anything malicious. But he was not cold and he was laying on the field. And Gibbs said, oh, yeah, you're so worried and terrified. And you run up there and you find out he's just snoring. And that was clearly the attitude. And again, I mean, that was an attitude born of ignorance. I mean, but in that statement right there, he shows concern for the player and an ignorance that getting knocked out cold was possibly the worst injury this player could have received on that occasion.
But see, where the NFL runs into problems before 94 was with the denial of benefits to the retired players.
Yes.
That
yes,
sued them.
This is an excellent point.
They've denied benefits to multiple players who have documented health issues from multiple doctors, and it's still denied.
Well, and this was part of the function of the union under Upshaw.
And Duerson.
I was about to say, his right-hand man, Duerson. That was criminal as well, by the way. I mean, the whole way Upshaw ran that union for 25 years makes Chicago mob bosses look principled.
Well, and if anybody's a hockey fan, look up the Allan Eagleson story involving when he ran the NHL union of players and how Upshaw ran the NFL, all too cozy with the actual entity they were supposed to be protecting the players from when they
and
were actually
their own personal power.
Yes.
As their main goal.
Yep. And I don't know how you get around that when it was collectively bargained to a certain degree, if the issue was never raised. And
well, it was an uneducated union base. You know, everyone was so happy to be getting paid quite good money for the times for doing something they enjoyed.
Well, and to a degree, it still is uneducated. Because they still don't have guaranteed contracts.
No, though they've gotten smart enough now. Like, the announced contracts are all bullshit, but almost every contract signed, the real number anyone's looking at is the guaranteed number.
Right, but as we know, from many cases, young people with money, it's not making them till they're 30.
No. Like, no, but that's way outside the bounds of CTE.
But to go no, back I know, to but the uneducated point
you were making
unions.
There was, you are right. I mean, this might not have turned into the fiasco it has had the NFL shown any respect for past players for the 30 years beforehand. I mean, I think when this started to come out, some of the rage was from the older generation of players who were living in, you know, $100 a month flop houses, you know, when Ditka was screaming for the old guard of players to be treated with some sort of human dignity. You know, I think this kind of piggybacked onto it.
And it's hard. I understand where the current players are coming from, even the current owners. Because you're paying with your money to guys that never generated you any revenue. I have an easier time understanding the owner's argument in that case, as opposed to the players, because without the old guys that popularized the game, the money wouldn't be there for these guys.
Well, it's the same, and the owners are making more money. Why do you think, you know, Jerry Jones was able to buy the Cowboys for, what, $130 million? It's worth $1 billion now? Who made football that popular? It wasn't you, Jerry. It was those former players and people falling in love with that game and those former players. Like, I think that has to be addressed, though currently the strategy of both the union and the league seems to be they'll die off soon enough. And for the most part, they're true. That's correct.
And with the whole concussion issue now, that whole issue of denied benefits has gone away. We don't know if it's changed, if it's easier to obtain benefits. Like, we've got the case with the NCAA right now where Northwestern is going to be holding a vote, their football team, whether to unionize or not. They had to go to the fucking courts to get a decision to allow them to unionize. And they're not necessarily looking to get paid. They want medical benefits for after. And for as much as leagues and schools say, oh, your education's free, that's $200,000 education. Yeah, but the education doesn't heal my knees, and my head.
And in the case head, of shoulder. Most of them, it's a fake education. You know, there are a lot of Division two and three schools, you know, being on the football team's fun and fine, and you get your scholarship and you get an education. But any Division I team, really, do you think these people are being educated?
No.
Like,
not at all.
You know, in...
Well, look at Dexter Manley.
Or in Peyton Manning's fourth year, he took ballroom dancing as a credit class. I mean...
Well, but go back, Dexter Manley was one of the best defensive ends in football. Was illiterate. And he graduated from college. And he couldn't read. But for whatever reason, and I love college football. And I love college basketball. But it's a sham. The leagues love it because it's a feeder system to their sport. And it costs them nothing. Baseball and hockey actually pay for their development of their players. For the most part, there's junior hockey leagues that some guys jump directly from junior to the pros. But that's few and far between out of the number that get drafted every year. Baseball, almost exclusively all players spend time in the minors, which is funded by the major league teams. And even the junior hockey leagues in Canada were... The players are drafted to the NHL. The NHL pays compensation to the teams based on where a player from that team is drafted. As far as I know, the NFL and the NBA have no such compensation package for these schools.
Well, yeah. Why do you think the NBA would be on board with trying to make the college basketball stars stay for 2 years?
Well, it passes the cost.
It's a hell of a lot cheaper than developing your own farm system.
Yeah. Okay, so we've veered a little off topic here, but it's all intertwined. All this shit is intertwined. How they resolve it, my guess is it's going to be in court, which the NFL will go down kicking and screaming before they will admit to any of this, any culpability in it. And never forget, the NFL, Tagliabue was a lawyer, Roselle was a lawyer, Goodell's a lawyer, and Roger Goodell has been, he was Tagliabue's right-hand man, his lead attorney from the beginning of this. And he's still involved in it. And the talking points have never changed. Ever. So the man, to me, who's most culpable if anything ever comes to bear of this, is Goodell.
Tagliabue, who I was never a big fan of either, I think holds a great deal of responsibility for this as well.
Yeah, but if you're going to say that the research wasn't there,
no, back then, I believe the whole creation of the mild head injury, traumatic head injury committee, or that was a deliberate attempt to obscure.
Yes, but was Goodell was involved?
Oh yeah, yeah. But I don't feel like letting Tagliabue off the hook for this.
No, but. Tagliabue's name is attached to it. But you can almost guarantee Goodell was the man who was involved in naming it, picking the guys who were on it, the message, everything. Because you can't be that close to the guy that's in charge and not have input. And when did Tagliabue retire? Like, late 90s?
No.
Early 2000s?
Later than you think, 2006.
Fuck. Okay, well then, but Goodell still hasn't changed the message when he's had the chance. He's done the same thing.
He has slightly changed the message. He has tried to... Here's one positive thing I think the NFL has done.
PR.
They've tried to farm the study of this out to the NIH. And I like that vision. I mean, as you point out, no one doing research does not have an agenda or a bias. But... let's look for the best possible unit to do this study with the least possible bias. I kind of like that move.
Yeah, but
maybe
okay.
I'm just being willfully naive, but...
Well, I don't know if that's the case, but it's the Boston University group whose main researcher, Anne McKee...
No, she's... she's a pathologist. She does. She's not really a researcher. She stains the slides and looks at them, and now she's working at PR.
But she's been running. She's been studying brains for like 20 to 30 years.
In the function of someone doing the cutting. She wasn't the author of papers beforehand. And, you know, she made a comment that I think is... you know, she stated, I'm really wondering if every single football player has this. Now, if the NFL said concussions don't cause brain injuries, that's a ridiculous statement.
But they did.
I know. But based on the actual knowledge and the body of research about this, that's every bit as irresponsible a statement. That's but just wild conjecture with no basis in fact.
Well, but the NFL has been stating that for 20 years.
Oh, I know, but, you know, this is part of my problem with the book.
Marlon, this...
chilling and headline statement that sells books. I just don't think the research is there. There are a great many retired football players who go on to lead normal... and successful lives.
If we don't know that, though, for the majority of them. Marlon, we only hear about the ones that are successful and the stars. Yeah, Troy Aikman in the booth.
Yes,
Steve Young on ESPN.
Okay, so if we went through,
they're
probably easily find 35 players who have shown no symptoms of this.
Yeah, but do they have it?
Come out and say.
Do they have it, though?
Okay. Do they have it? Then what does it actually cause? Why is there mild severity? Why is there strong severity? What are the linkages between alcohol abuse? What are the linkages between anything? What, again, it's not evidenced in 100% of football players, but a statement like that, it's great for bloody headlines.
Yeah, but so is the NFL's.
Oh, I know. I'm not letting the NFL off the hook. I'm just saying both sides have made irresponsible statements.
Marlon, any time you have someone threatening your business,
yes, it's a
turn. You will do whatever it takes to discredit or lessen the impact of that damage.
It's called confirmation bias,
and which is
it applies to both sides.
Yes, but the NFL has a lot more to fucking lose than one researcher or pathologist at Boston University. They've attacked everybody that's come out with studies on this. And then when it got to be a public relations nightmare, then they threw money at it. The only time the NFL changed their tune or added, and they haven't changed their attitude to me in anything they've done. The $30 million they gave to the National Institute of Health was a PR move.
Absolutely.
And it's worked. And it's worked.
Well, it's partially.
It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed anything.
Okay.
The studies are the same out of NIH.
This is an industry-specific problem. Correct? At least as far as we know. So
but we don't. It could lead as far as soccer.
I personally am kind of in agreement that the NFL should be footing the bill for this research. Who else is going to pay to have this research done? Well, you could have private companies that will then branch off into mouth guards and brain aid drinks.
Marlon, the NFL still has original members of the MTBI committee sitting on the board. What has changed? They changed the names out when people started digging into the backgrounds of the guys who were on this committee that were authoring papers claiming that concussions weren't a long-term health risk to NFL players. So you PR it up, change a few guys, shuffle the chairs around. They threw $1 million at BU, didn't like the narrative that was coming out of BU. Then determined that we're going to give $30 million to the National Institute of Health. That's what I have a problem with. Either you go with one group and then change because you don't like it, or you just stay with one group and it doesn't look like you're trying to manipulate studies. If they would have stayed with BU, I would be behind what they were doing.
Well, BU was the group that threw out Bennett Omalu, the guy who found it, and is actually headed by an ex-pro wrestler with absolutely no medical credentials at all.
Now, would they have got Would they have got the brains?
The head of the mild traumatic group.
But the pro wrestler you're referring to?
Yes.
Actually played high-level college football. And the reason he got involved with this was because he was having mental health issues.
Well, but he himself attributes this to being hit in the back of the head with a folding chair during his wrestling career.
And so that's less valid than a helmet-to-helmet hit in the NFL?
Okay, but so if CTA will devastate your life, cause you to make bad decisions, why then is he perfectly qualified and equipped to be the chairperson of the Sports
Marlon, Legacy Institute? You sound like every person or corporation that attacks the whistleblowers. To that argument.
Who just used the argument of the credentials of a rheumatologist heading the NFL's one? I'm saying, and you said Boston Group was great.
Nowinski has never claimed to be an expert on concussions. The reason I can attack the rheumatologist, his name's on published fucking papers stating that concussions do not lead to long-term health deterioration in NFL players. Nowinski has never published a fucking paper. He's the one that's hustled to get the brains so that these studies can be done. The NFL would be doing fuck all if they weren't pushed to it.
No,
none
absolutely.
Of the health benefits or job safety requirements that we know today would have ever been enacted if business is left to itself.
Yes, but
and I'm anti-union, and I know this.
No, but Boyd, you haven't answered my question or my statement, which was I would rather see this in the hands of the NIH.
I did answer that.
Would. Okay, but so you
I said
just stick with one.
No, I said yes. You went with BU. You gave them $1 million and said we're leaving you alone. And then all of a sudden, when the narrative coming out of Boston University wasn't what the NFL wanted to hear, all of a sudden, NIH is getting $30 million, and they're now the preferred brain studier for the NFL. It doesn't add up. It's big tobacco almost to a T. The game plan is almost the same. PR, PR, pay for your own studies, deny, 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 and then eventually the NFL will grovel. Just like that payout for $765 million, which they settled, which was thrown out by a judge.
Oh, has it been thrown out now? That's why
thrown out by a judge for being nowhere close to enough.
No, and it's not. And
it worked out to like 3,000 a player or something. It was fucking ridiculous. And the owners are bouncing all the way to the bank.
Oh yeah, I thought the settlement was, you know, the settlement though can be taken as an admission of guilt.
Yes, but it's. And we talked about this last night, the Adam Carolla case of patent trolls. The NFL is just trying to make it go away because it'll be cheaper to make it go away.
Well, and of that 765, I'd be class action suits notoriously
profit the lawyers.
Only the lawyers.
Yeah.
But that's not going to change. If it goes up or down, it's still not going to get to the players.
No. It's not, unless they can enter into a settlement where the NFL pays the lawyers' fees too, which they may be ordered to do eventually if this keeps going on. Their best strategy right now would be to admit that our studies were flawed and we want to work with the players going forward. Okay. How they can keep basically still using the same, they're using the same argument now that there is research starting to be done for close to the last decade of all these protocols and all these leagues for how to treat someone with a concussion. It's going in the right direction, but they're still denying any causality from a concussion to, and not, I'm not saying every player that plays in the NFL is going to have it. And that was an irresponsible statement that that doctor made. But to deny that it exists or that there's not enough research to know it exists is you're either dumb or a liar. To quote Adam Carolla, you're either dumb or a liar. In this case, the NFL is a liar. That there's no, they've taken no responsibility in this at all. Mike Webster was fucking dead before he was paid any disability. Dead and fucking broke. You want to hear something sad about a guy in the NFL Hall of Fame? His son found him in a fucking dilapidated hotel room with a 5-gallon bucket beside the bed that he was fucking going to the bathroom in. And these are the heroes we're supposed to look at as the pillars of the NFL. It's fucking criminal what they've done and made these so-called, they talk about them, heroes of the game. They fucking glorified him in NFL films. They fucking pimped him out everywhere they could make a buck. And then to deny them disability benefits or any type of humanity should be criminal. And there's going to come, it's going to come to a crossroad where it's either going to be, they're going to pay out a lot of fucking money or the league's going to go away. It'll bankrupt the fucking league. These guys might be rich cocksuckers that own these teams, but they're not that fucking rich. And if you look at how they're running this game now, with the overexposure and everything that's, I believe, going to come to a head in the next decade, look out.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a football fan, look the fuck out.
Yeah. Well, I don't have much to add now. I just want to bring up what I thought was kind of the most chilling passage in the whole book. It's a man named Gay who wrote a book called Football Physics. The average mass of a lineman had increased by 60% between 1920 and 2000. The average speed had increased by 12%. The amount of kinetic energy unleashed in the pit had effectively doubled in the last century, which I truly believe is why this sort of syndrome was not obvious in the past.
But the NFL has the highest standard in drug testing of any professional sporting league.
That's in my mind.
And now this is where the players are culpable. And if I'm the NFL, the NFL is fucked. Because they can't come out and say now, well, the players are to blame because of all the illegal substances they're taking. Because for 20 years, at least, they've been saying they have the best drug testing policy of any pro sport in the world. Which is a fallacy. Why you would keep touting that out there? And you know why they did? Because baseball was in the midst of a fuckstorm with steroids. So the NFL just kept trotting their guys out there. Yeah, look at our drug policy. How many of our guys are getting caught?
Well, and actually, the average weight of a lineman has increased another 10 pounds since 2000.
But no drug problem there. We got 330 guys, 330-pound linemen at the combine running a 4.6 40.
And yeah, but, they are ripped.
And 15% like, body fat at 330. Yes. I was 12% at 190.
Yeah.
Just let that sink in. More percent body fat on 140 more pounds.
But there's no chemicals involved.
So, and this is where the NFL may eventually have to fall on the sword on this point.
Massive drug testing.
No, but this is where they can't.
Would fucking no. They absolutely have to find a way to do it. They haven't been able to do. They had agreed in principle on HGH testing, and that was 3 years ago.
They still
don't have a fucking policy or a testing system.
No, but nobody does yet, as far as I know, on HGH. Not even the Olympics. There's not one test that you can say is definitive, and. And this is the player's culpability in all of this, which I can't believe hasn't been brought up. Well, it has been, but they try and throw it into that whole drug abuse, alcohol abuse, all these other external factors.
Yes, which I think there may be validity to it that has some, to be studied. Yes.
Some. But for the players going forward, like from... Well, the Steelers were using it in the 60s and 70s. They were using steroids.
Oh, yeah.
Their whole offensive line bench pressed 500 pounds. It was national fucking story whenever they played. And there's the offensive lineman for the Steelers all bench over 500 pounds.
Well, Webster himself ended his rookie season at 210 and came back at 270.
So this is where the players are going to run into.
There was a connection there.
But how?
Now, does that invalidate this? No. It's.
No, but the players are culpable. The players
are partially culpable. The league is partially culpable.
The league's going to bear the brunt of it because of everything they've declared publicly.
Yes, and the league has also profited by far the most. So I don't disagree with them bearing the brunt of this.
No, but when the players don't want to agree to harsher drug testing, that's where they're culpable. When you're bigger, stronger, faster, the hits are of course going to be. It's it when you had a car in the 1920s that could have had a top end speed of a go-kart track car now. when you had an accident, yeah, not as many people died.
No, and seatbelts were a lot less vital. But as cars became faster, yeah, a lot more safety equipment was developed.
Now, they'll never be able to create a helmet.
Oh, no, no, that... no, I was wrong. Like, equipment isn't going to fix this issue.
No, no, and that's what I was going to say. They'll never be able to design a helmet because your brain's on the inside. And as far as I know, you can't protect anything from the inside, or guys wouldn't get broken legs playing hockey or blow out knees. The brain's no different. So everything the NFL has done has been an attempt to shift focus, smokescreen, PR. And this is all going to come to a head and bite them. By the time this thing's settled, it's going to be north of $1.5 billion, in my opinion, of what they're going to pay out to settle. Because they can't afford to have this destroy the game. And eventually it will. Eventually, injuries and suicides and dementia and all this stuff is going to make it we're the best athletes. Why, if you're Julius Peppers and you're a good enough athlete, I'm sure he could have played basketball if he didn't in college. They just make a choice. You're going to see guys go to different sports where the injury to your brain isn't as debilitating as football. It's just, it's common sense. And the other chilling thing in the book to me was, and I didn't write down who stated it, but if 10% of kids stopped playing football, the NFL would be doomed. And I think he said the mothers stopped letting their kids play, the NFL is doomed. Because at the age when kids start playing football, the mother is the main decision maker on health in most families. If they don't want their kids playing football for fear of injury, they're done. And I won't be surprised if in our lifetime, Marlon, there's no NFL, or it's a very watered down version from what we know as right now, even, and people think it's watered down.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree with you, but this has to be addressed. I mean,
but how do you stop them from getting hit in the head?
How do you stop them from
the lineman
putting the needle in their ass and putting on that extra 15 pounds that gets them to the next level?
I know. Everybody's culpable in this.
I agree, and that's kind of my point. It's not evil versus good or guilty versus innocent. The whole system is flawed.
And it's become so popular, nobody wants to fuck with it. Like, if I'm a defensive player in the NFL... and I'm a hard hitter, Rodney Harrison wouldn't even be in the league. Ronnie Lott. All these guys that are in the Hall of Fame, Night Train Lane. Fuck, they wouldn't even be allowed on they'd be suspended for the season for some of the hits. So I don't know how we come to an area where you have 300-pounders slamming headfirst into 300-pounders, play after play after play, where it's, you take that out of the game. Maybe they do it like the CFL. Maybe that's the answer.
Widen the field?
Well, line them up a yard apart.
Yeah, well.
So you're not, the first thing that they contact is head. They're 6 inches apart. You can't even get up.
Yeah.
So in the CFL, we have a yard. The defensive line is a yard away from the ball, which gives the offensive lineman time to get up in a stance and at least get their head up Webster's tool of the trade was to stick his helmet into the nose tackle's chest.
And chin.
So, something's going to give, whether it's rule changes, concussion protocols, how long guys are out. Owners already complained. Guys are
a waiver of risk, which I still think in many cases, most cases, I think that for the potential returns, people would still choose even in the presence of the facts.
I don't know where they're going to go from here. It's the book is very thought-provoking, if you didn't get that from our podcast, and can be interpreted many different ways. I was more on the side of the researchers in the book and didn't take quite as critical a look at them. But Marlon, you made a great point to me last night that had me thinking a lot today about the hysteria that follows a new medical discovery.
Yeah.
And it gets blown out of proportion to some degree. And I can give you example of H1N1, SARS, bird flu, West Nile. All these things were going to wipe us out. And my take on those things were they're minuscule compared to the world population. And I somewhat ignored them.
Yeah. Well, at some point, there will be a flu that'll knock off 50 million in the Americas. But it, you know, it's not preventable. You know, regardless of how many flu shots you get, they're still, you know, only against one particular strain if something tries to mutate. You can't protect yourself from everything. But whenever this stuff comes up and gets the media attention, there is something of hysteria. I mean, it's been proven in hundreds of cases that an epidemic will have a small number of actual sufferers and a great many people who believe they're suffering from it. Their symptoms are real, but they don't actually have the virus, for example.
And
it's just human nature. I mean, if you are told, oh, you know, if you start getting a headache, you will be sick. A lot of people, and this isn't because they're hypochondriacs or anything, but they will start to feel the symptoms. And that's why I think, you know, I really did like your idea of let's donate the brain to science of football players. I mean, it would be really hard to implement and there would be religious challenges and whatnot, but
no, but it would be voluntary. You couldn't force them to do it.
No.
But it would be just like signing the organ donor on the back of your driver's license.
Yeah.
You could, when you sign your contract, they give you, here, this option's available to you. When your physical body is no longer alive, would you like to have your brain donated to science? But here's the issue with that, now thinking about it. Then you're 50 years out from having any kind of conclusive study.
I know, and the game could be gone by then. But, I mean,
but back to the point.
I think this is, this obviously is a real thing. This is a real thing that has to be studied and addressed. And that's my biggest problem with the NFL, was its attempts to discredit it and bury it. Whereas if they had reacted properly in the early goings, we'd be 20 years further. Figuring out what the hell we have to do.
But and the players are to blame there too. Because Lee Steinberg was Steve Young's agent. He held his own concussion awareness groups for his clients in the early 90s.
And Plummer famously heckled him.
Yeah. So, and I get it. When you're good at one thing and you can make a very good living at it, you don't want it to go away either.
No.
And for a lot of guys in the NFL, that's their one skill. In any professional sport, they've dedicated their lives from a young age to this one thing, bypassing education or any other opportunities that come their way to focus on this one skill. So they're stuck too. And we're getting worse as a society in this respect, where we used to laugh at the Russians and the communist countries that had academies where they would send talented 10-year-olds to train only in that sport. We laughed at that. The only difference in our culture now is they live at home. We're doing the same fucking thing.
Oh, yeah, we're doing the same thing without even feeding them or clothing them or putting them in a disciplined environment.
Right, they live at home. But if you want your kid...
And they end up with shadowy gang connections, because if you lived on that block, you had gang connections. I'm not a big fan of DeSean Jackson, but he got fucked over.
Yeah. No, but Philadelphia fucked him over even worse. Like, to not say anything when they released him with that story that came out like the same day or the day before that he had gang connections.
Oh, yeah. It just put a... And I read that story. What a ridiculous...
All Philadelphia had to come out and say, and this is a non-issue, he didn't fit into our team environment.
Yeah.
That's all.
An actual statement saying,
not just
has nothing to do with the report on newjersey.com.
But they didn't even have to say that. They said nothing. All they had to say was disciplinary reasons. It reminded me of Vince Young when he cussed out Fisher and he was done in Tennessee. But they won't release that stuff. How that never leaked out in Philly is beyond me. That he cussed out Chip Kelly 3-4 times. But we can't get into that. We're running way long here.
Yeah, we got to sign off here.
So in closing, I just want to say it's a really good, I won't say it's a great book. It's a really good book. And if you're a fan of the NFL and you want to understand, because most of the time you just get headlines. At least this was an attempt to put everything that's happened so far with the concussion issue in the NFL into one space. And I have a better understanding of what's going on and all the parties involved. Because when you get it headline by headline every couple of days, when it was really at the high point of the reporting on it, you lose scope. Here it gives you somewhat concise, I can't think of the word I want, but a concise, not encyclopedia, but a bringing together.
It's a timeline. It's a chronology of what's happened and who was
involved.
You.
Thank you. And it's thought-provoking, which in a book like this, is all you could ask.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I don't think that we should shut down the NFL right now.
No.
It certainly has given me part of the scope of the problem, and I just wish I had better ideas for, I can't even suggest anything correctly for how to proceed. I mean, we'll probably touch on it over the season or more in the off season. Because I finished this book about 5 days ago, and I haven't fully digested it. It is a really good book. Strongly recommend it.
Yes, as well as I. All right. If you want to check out our podcasts on iTunes or Stitcher for your Android device, you can listen to it on our website, offensivelines.ca. Follow us on Twitter at Offensive Lines or on our personal Twitter accounts at O-Lines Marlin or at O-Lines Boyd, facebook.com/offensivelines. And if you want to send us an email, it's offensivelines@shaw.ca. I'm Boyd.
I'm Marlin. And that was Offensive Lines.
Degenerate fucking gambler.